It's been almost a week since a federal court judge ruled that the Daily Telegraph newspaper defamed the actor Geoffrey Rush by claiming he had sexually harassed an actor, later revealed as Erin Jean Norval. Justice Michael Wigney said, and I quote, "This was a recklessly irresponsible piece of sensationalist journalism of the worst kind, the very worst kind." While actors Geoffrey Rush and Erin Jean Norval see things very differently, they both agree on one point. Damien Carrick takes a look.
There are no winners in this case. It's been extremely distressing for everyone involved.
This case has caused hurt for everyone.
Justice Wigney echoed those sentiments. He began his summary of his 178-page decision with the words, "This is a sad and unfortunate case."
It plainly would have been better for all concerned if the issues that arose in the saga that played out in this courtroom in October and November last year had been allowed to be dealt with in a different way and in a different place to the harsh and uncompromising adversarial world of a defamation proceeding.
Media law expert Professor David Rolfe, based at the University of Sydney, agrees. But like the judge, he points out this litigation was a defamation action against the Daily Telegraph newspaper.
So there were three publications. One, the very now famous or notorious front page, King Lear, with the large headline, King Lear, L-E-E-R, and the photograph of Geoffrey Rush in character, which set out the initial allegations and kicked this off. That was followed the following day by a sort of follow-up story, which was also sued upon. The third publication here was the poster suggesting scandal, which was posted up outside newsagents.
These allegations all related to a production of King Lear at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016. It involved the relationship between actor Geoffrey Rush, King Lear, and the actress playing Cordelia, Erin Jean Norval.
What were the allegations?
Some of them were general imputations of being a pervert, but some of them were quite specific allegations about inappropriate conduct, sexually inappropriate conduct, or scandalously inappropriate conduct in relation to the performance at the STC in King Lear.
Things like at a rehearsal of the final scene, he's alleged to be hovering over the dead body and pretend to caress and grope her breasts, I think was one allegation, that he regularly made comments and jokes during rehearsals which contained innuendo, that he brushed a hand along one breast during a preview performance of King Lear, and then there were text messages.
Yes, and so well, I think it's important to note she had made a sort of private complaint internally within the Sydney Theatre Company, and that had been obviously disclosed to the journalist at the Daily Telegraph by some means. The timeline here is that, you know, she didn't participate in the original story. In fact, had taken the position in dealing with her concerns that she didn't want to make them public in that way, and certainly not through the Daily Telegraph.
So at the trial, the Daily Telegraph argued the defence of truth. The only way they can do this is by having Erin Jean Norval to give evidence about the events as she sees them. Now, the judge found that the paper could not establish truth on the balance of probabilities, and this all went to the credibility of this witness, this actress.
Yes, the defence of justification or truth, substantial truth, became the main major issue.
The judge described Norval as, quote, prone to exaggeration and embellishment. On the other hand, he said she presented as intelligent, articulate and confident. Was he saying that she was lying or that she just had a different perspective? What was he saying?
Well, no. I mean, in fact, he was at pains to say that he wasn't finding that she was lying. And the assessment of her prone to embellishment of evidence was, I think, most significantly in the context of the suggestion that other people in the rehearsal room had been complicit.
Complicit in not giving evidence which would support her?
Well, no, complicit, I think, in not calling out or giving evidence to the effect that this behaviour had occurred or that there were problems in the rehearsal room. And I think the characterisation of that by Norval was what led him particularly to suggest that there was a proneness to exaggeration there. So I think it's very important to indicate that he was at pains to find that she wasn't lying.
I stand by everything I said at trial. I told the truth. I know what happened. I was there.
David Rolfe, where does this leave women who want to come forward, even confidentially to their employers, to discuss feeling unsafe, harassed at work? What message
does this decision send to those women?
One of the things that I think is important to emphasise is that this was a defamation proceeding between a plaintiff and a publisher, and so that really was what the case was about. But I think it's difficult to divorce the treatment of Norval from that, the way which she was treated in this proceeding. It would be difficult, I mean, from the perspective of prospective complainants, not to feel, whether or not their concerns are legitimate or not, that there might be a sort of chilling effect.
That's Professor David Rolfe, a defamation law expert based at University of Sydney Law School, speaking with Damien Carrick. And you can hear that full interview with Damien on the Law Report at 5:30 this afternoon. And Geoffrey Rush was awarded $850,000 in damages for non-economic damage. And there'll be a further hearing to determine his economic damages. In other words, his lost income. Those damages could well run into the millions.